Once you've been here for 3 hours, you'll find it cold.
Hello, how are you, Nick?
The legislature just goes in between everything.
Yeah.
Three notebooks. Protest, Nolan.
That's all?
Three notebooks.
For what?
The funeral protest bill that is completely unconstitutional.
So, before we get started, just a couple of protocols for the room. This is the, as you, we're glad that you're here. How many of you are here for the first time? Raise your hand. Okay. So for some of you, this will be a gentle reminder. Clapping is not allowed unless the chair says it's okay to clap. Occasionally, we will get testimony, especially from kids that have done great things, that I will allow clapping. But otherwise, no clapping. If you like something, you're welcome to do this. If you don't like something, you're welcome to do this. Very good job back there. You're a professional at this. For security reasons, if you have signs, you can keep them below your chin at your chest, but you can't cover your face and you can't block the views behind you, just basic decorum. If you want to testify, I need you to sign up on the sheet that is still out at the table at the entrance. We take it on a first-come, first-served basis. After we have, today we're just going to have a few, I think four folks that will be invited. I will give courtesies up front to folks with children, dependent children, and also anyone that requires special assistance. Happy to take those before we go to the list. In terms of when you come up to testify, it's just your first and last name. We don't want your address. We don't need anything else. And that clock in front of you on that big hunk of wood will count down the time. Normally, it's 3 minutes, if depending on how many people sign up or how long the proceedings are going. Sometimes I will skinny it down to two. I can reassure you what can be said really well in 3 minutes can be said even better in 2 minutes. But if you've prepared, if I do have to skinny down the amount of time for each person, if you've prepared for three, definitely, and it'll just mess everything up to try to get you from three to two, I'll let you go with three. We're really glad that you're here. This is an important topic, and today is our opportunity to air out the proposed policy for the council and the resolution moving forward. So all are present. Good afternoon, Carla. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm well.
Good. City Council will come to order. Today is Thursday, April 28th. We're in afternoon session. We have one agenda item. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed. Can you please read the title for the resolution?
Okay. Item 418, establish a policy and set of protocols to simultaneously prevent and investigate acts of terrorism, protect civil rights and civil liberties, and promote Portland as an open and inclusive community.
If we could have the chief and Ellen come forward, take a seat.
Can I just ask point of order?
Mm-hmm. We're going to do a substitute.
You're doing a substitute?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was just getting to that. There is a substitution that has been circulated both publicly and to the City Council, and I move the substitution.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. The substitute will serve as the basis of the hearing today if it's approved by City Council. Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion to substitute?
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Substitution is approved. I want to thank my colleagues here on the City Council for their engagement in this process and for their contributions to this effort. And I'd like to just detail just a few highlights of their work. To Commissioner Nick Fish, who is very helpful to me and Ellen and the Chief and others in setting out the initial framing of this issue in terms of our responsibility to help prevent and investigate terrorism while simultaneously protecting civil rights and civil liberties, and also doing everything we can to keep Portland an open and inclusive society. I appreciate the early counsel. It has served us well, and I'm grateful. To Commissioner Amanda Fritz, who helped put together, was the architect of our Much of our outreach efforts, we had a town hall that was very well attended, including small group discussion that allowed folks to not only during the large group portion of the process sort of express overall concerns, hopes, and questions, but in the smaller group discussions actually be able to spend some time talking about them. I appreciate your contribution to this. To Commissioner Saltzman, who has had long experience on this issue with this as a senior member of the City Council and has put forward his concerns in very straightforward fashion in the various iterations of the document. I think there we've had a total of 30-some versions of this document as we've sort of figured, tried to figure things out, learn something new. It gets revised. And then Commissioner Randy Leonard, who was here for the 05 resolution and has been very helpful in the latter part of this process in putting together language that was a refinement on the earlier draft and has helped people come together. So these folks up here, where it doesn't mean they're going to vote yes or no today, they have all been part of this process of research and development of the policy before you. I also want to express my deep appreciation to Chief Mike Reese and his team, who is, you know, not only does the great work every day of trying to keep the peace in the city, working with all of us in the community, but also just very good on policy. And I really appreciate your deep involvement in this. And finally, to Ellen, who has been the project manager for this, working with my staff, Amrit Sandhu and Antoinette Edwards and others. Ellen, this has been a full-time job for you for quite a while, and I think I speak for the entire council when I say thank you, the professionalism and the commitment to getting informed answers as best as we can. We are very grateful. So that is where we're at today. This concludes or potentially concludes about a 4.5-month process. And with that, we're going to get right into the explanation of what's before us, hear comments from Chief Reese. We've invited up Dwight Holden from the U.S. Attorney's Office and then also Andrea Meyer from ACLU. We'll take, again, folks with kids, anyone that needs special attention, to go right to testimony. Ellen.
Good afternoon, Mayor, members of City Council. My name is Ellen Osinak, and I'm a Deputy City Attorney in your City Attorney's Office. In December of last year, I began working on an assessment of the city's working relationship with the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force, and I'm pleased to be here today to walk you through the mayor's resolution. I would like to begin by thanking my boss, Linda Ming, your city attorney, and the mayor for giving me the opportunity to work on this project. And I particularly want to thank each of you on the City Council, as well as members of your staff who have been incredibly helpful. And the time and energy that you've devoted to this dynamic process has been inspiring. The resolution before you represents the culmination of months of hard work and complex negotiations. The good faith and good humor of Dwight Holden, the U.S. Attorney for Oregon, were invaluable assets during this process, and I cannot thank him enough for his dedication to getting this done. And Andrea Meyer, the legislative director of the ACLU, has been exceptionally generous with her time, providing insights that made this process better throughout, and I am very grateful for her work. Now, I'd like to walk you through the substitute resolution's 26 paragraphs. The first six or seven things are the preamble. And this first paragraph is an acknowledgement of the FBI's mission to prevent, investigate, and respond to terrorism in the United States. A lot of people have been curious and concerned and wanted to understand what we mean when we say terrorism. And what we mean is a federal criminal law definition, and it is has two components. One, there has to be a criminal act that's dangerous to human life, and there has to be the intent to influence government policy or affect the conduct of a government using intimidation, coercion, violence. And we also wanted to give an explanation of what a Joint Terrorism Task Force is. And in the most general terms, it's the FBI's local unit and the way that they have chosen to share and coordinate their resources with state and local governments in responding to terrorism. This paragraph is an acknowledgement that there many cities, most cities, enter into a memorandum of understanding with the JTTF, but the city of Portland will be cooperating with the JTTF according to the terms of this resolution. The Portland Police Bureau, this is an acknowledgement that they also have a role in protecting the lives and property and the rights of all people, and that they do so frequently through collaborative partnerships with the community and with other agencies. These next couple of parts of the preamble are an acknowledgement on our part that the City Council, the Commissioner in Charge, and the Police Chief are really always attempting to balance and prioritize and allocate the use of their resources in responding to critical crime prevention, and that's a big part of their mission. And it's hard work to prioritize those things. And part of the way that the city sometimes allocates those resources is to share and coordinate information with other agencies. And finally, we wanted to set out the city's understanding of the accountability of PPB personnel, that they are accountable to the police chief and the commissioner in charge for carrying out the city's policies. The policy guidance that has been the thread throughout this work has been the policy statement that the city wants to prevent and investigate acts of terrorism. We want to promote civil rights and civil liberties under both United States and Oregon law, and we especially want to promote Portland as an open and inclusive community. In working with the JTTF, the police chief is going to be regularly consulting with the FBI special agent in charge in order to determine how to rebalance and allocate resources and to determine whether or not there are aspects of JTTF work that can benefit from our participation. Accordingly, the police chief may assign officers to work with the JTTF on an as-needed basis, and that determination is going to be made by the police chief in consultation with the commissioner in charge of the Portland Police Bureau. In addition to regular briefings, and regular briefings really refers to the to use law enforcement term, their roll calls, their briefing that members of the squad receive sometimes weekly, sometimes daily. It's variable, so we've referred to them as just regular briefings. But in addition to attending those regular briefings, that the police chief is going to participate in the JTTF executive committee meetings, which occur approximately quarterly. And that PPB officers are going to work on JTTF investigations of suspected terrorism that have a criminal nexus, and to be particularly, it's important to stress this point, that in situations where the statutory or common law of Oregon is more restrictive of a Portland Police Bureau officer's investigative methods, that the PPB officer working on a JTTF investigation shall conform their investigative methods to the requirements of Oregon statutes or common law. This is a notification provision that tells our officers that if you're working with the JTTF, you need to notify the FBI special agent in charge and the police chief if there ever a situation arises where they're asked to do work that could be a potential violation or a violation of Oregon 181-575. And Oregon 181-850, and that they've got to report actual violations to the commissioner in charge. Oregon Revised Statute 181-575 says that a law enforcement agency shall not collect or maintain information about a person's First Amendment activities unless there are reasonable grounds to believe that the subject of the information is or may be involved in criminal activity. And Oregon 181-850 restricts the use of Oregon law enforcement resources to investigate immigration offenses. This is a clause that we haven't seen in previous agreements, and one that specifically gives a nod to the fact that the city attorney, that we provide legal advice to PPB officers, and that in situations where the officer is unclear about whether or not the more restrictive methods authorized under Oregon law would prevent them from doing something, that that they need to be able to seek legal advice from the city attorney, and that's what this paragraph does. Of course, the FBI has disclosure requirements, and this is an acknowledgement that if the FBI has classified information that we need in order to give legal advice to the officer, that that the chief will ask the FBI to have us sign a non-disclosure agreement, and if that can't or doesn't happen, that we're going to notify the police chief and the commissioner in charge. This part of the resolution is an acknowledgement that the work of the JTTF extends outside the boundaries of the city of Portland and can encompass nationwide investigations, and that the city acknowledges that and specifically authorizes the chief to assign officers to work on investigations, whether or not they're based in the city of Portland. But want to stress again that regardless of where the officer is operating, that the restrictions and investigative methods must still conform to Oregon law. These are talking about management, these next couple of paragraphs. And this is the city's policy statement that the police chief will seek clearance at the top secret, secure compartmentalized information level, so it's TSSCI level, and the commissioner in charge of the Portland Police Bureau will seek clearance at the secret level. This paragraph really is important on an operational level, because you can't have two different lines of supervision, and we're attempting to make this very clear. So let me make clear what the resolution means, which is that in this paragraph, the special agent in charge or designee is going to supervise and direct the operational and day-to-day work of the PPB officers who are detailed to work with the JTTF. But for non-JTTF work, the PPB officers who work with the JTTF will be under the supervision of the Portland Police Bureau. This is a reporting requirement that says that the police chief, by the end of January of every year, will provide a report with appropriate public information to City Council and the public on the Portland Police Bureau's work with the JTTF, including any issues related to compliance with Oregon laws. This is a continuity provision saying that within 30 days after any change in personnel, that in the commissioner in charge of the police bureau, the police chief, the FBI special agent in charge, or the U.S. attorney for Oregon, that the commissioner in charge is going to meet with those folks to make sure that everybody understands our resolution. This is another reporting requirement. The office of the city attorney is going to confer with the office of the attorney general, and we're going to determine in writing whether or not there have been any changes during the past year that would preclude us from working with the JTTF. And we've highlighted, you know, some of the most relevant provisions, including, again, the protection against compiling information. The City Council also is directing the police chief and the commissioner in charge to request regular briefings from the FBI special agent in charge, and we said at least twice a year, on the work of the JTTF. And that's so that the police chief and the commissioner in charge can be familiar with the terrorist threats in the Portland area and will therefore be better able to manage the local public safety issues. As another oversight piece, the council is directing the chief to assign a PPB supervisor to the JTTF at any time a Portland Police Bureau officer is assigned to JTTF work. This is a training piece, again, to ensure compliance with applicable state and federal laws, that the Office of the City Attorney will be giving annual training to officers who work with the JTTF. This is a provision that directs the Portland Police Bureau to adopt publicly available administrative policies and procedures that are consistent with the resolution so that they'll have operational policies. And finally, that the provisions of this resolution are binding city policy, can't be changed unless we have another open hearing, and the City Council ratifies any changes. The last section is referring to the 2005 resolution and superseding it.
And before I ask the chief to make some remarks for my colleagues on the council, I'd appreciate if we could hear from the chief, then also hear from Ms. Meyer and Mr. Holton, and then we can bring them back up for questions after that.
Thank you.
Thank you. I want to thank Mayor Adams and City Council for the time to provide testimony today and for the thoughtful process that we have been engaged in regarding the issue of public safety and our partnership with the Federal Bureau of Investigations. This process has given members of the community and stakeholders the opportunity to voice their opinions and provide City Council with important information to help discern a course of action. It's clear from information provided to Council and from past criminal investigations that our city has had individuals and organizations engaged in terrorist operations that negatively impact the safety of our community and the safety of our nation. My concern today is that we are currently not at the table with other law enforcement partners in the JTTF. As information and investigations are discussed, we are not a party to those discussions. As operational plans are developed and implemented in our city, we are not at the table. If an operational plan is developed for surrounding cities such as Beaverton and Gresham, we are not at the table. This is a disservice to our community and not in the best interest of public safety. The Portland Police Bureau is by far the largest law enforcement agency in the state of Oregon, with resources, personnel, and expertise that may prove invaluable in the investigation and prosecution of terrorist organizations intent on causing community harm. We know our community, and we have developed positive relationships with many of the stakeholders who have testified to Council on this issue. That knowledge and those relationships have helped us in the past to better guide and influence the investigative processes of our federal law enforcement partners. The FBI will continue to conduct terrorist investigations in our city, whether we are at the table or not. Our participation in those discussions allows for local oversight and provides for local examination of JTTF investigations. Legitimate questions have been raised about privacy rights and public safety as law enforcement conducts investigations into terrorist activity. I firmly believe constitutionally protected rights and public safety are not at opposite ends of a spectrum, and nor are they mutually exclusive. It is our duty as police officers and as a community to be vigilant regarding both of these positions. I am also concerned that some people in Portland will see our participation in terrorist investigations as threatening. Relationships between the community and the police are built on trust, and we have worked diligently to build positive connections with communities that feel particularly impacted by these types of investigations. In fact, at a recent public meeting on the JTTF, a person remarked that the Police Bureau and Arab-Muslim community relationship was exceptionally strong. I would hope that as we move forward, those communities will give us an opportunity to show we continue to be trustworthy and capable of protecting the community and individual privacy rights. I believe we have an opportunity at this critical juncture to improve our relationship with our federal partners and with the community. This resolution allows for the Portland Police Bureau to participate with the JTTF in a collaborative manner where we are at the table, attending roll calls, briefings, and other meetings where cases are developed and investigations are discussed. That keeps us in the information sharing loop, which is exactly what most people expect from all law enforcement agencies in light of past communication failures. This also provides for local oversight and input into how and when investigations are opened. Lastly, when appropriate and approved by the Chief of Police in consultation with the Commissioner in charge of the police, resources from the Police Bureau may be allocated to investigations on an as-needed basis. I would ask your support of this resolution as we move forward.
Thank you both. If you could stay nearby. Mr. Holton. For those of you that joined us late, the protocols of the room are to make sure that everyone feels comfortable speaking their truth, and that might or might not fit well with everyone else in the room. So no clapping, no cheering, no booing, no hissing, no auditory sound. If you like something, you're free to do this. If you don't like something, you're free to do this. But otherwise, would ask you to facilitate everyone having their time at the microphone. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Sorry, let me get my papers here. I have also a letter from Attorney General Kroger. I'm trying to get it printed for you, but it's currently on my BlackBerry. It's short. If we need to, I'll read it. But let's see. There it is if we get there.
Before you get started, I just want to say it's really great that you brought your daughter to work today.
It is. I wasn't going to bring attention to that. It is Bring Your Child to Work Day. And so she and I began the day along with my son on doing a radio show. And we've been all over the city. It's been fun. And I will remark at the risk of pandering that she very much likes your pink suit. So,
what is her name? I can't read her.
This is Fiona.
Hi, Fiona. How are you? Good.
The first
Glad
thing,
you're here.
The first thing she said to me was, I like the pink girl.
Why, do you want to email that letter to
someone? I will. You know, I think they're going to, I asked my assistant to send it over. I didn't want to take anyone away. So, well, I mainly want to thank each of you for your leadership. As we have discussed this issue over the last 4 or 5 months, I have been struck at every turn at the commitment of each one of you to getting this right and to meeting our twin responsibilities of protecting people and respecting and enforcing civil rights. And so I mainly want to thank you. It's interesting to me, this is my first experience with City Hall politics in any way. I've worked with some of you on a number of issues before, but it's my first in-depth experience. And what's interesting to me is how each of you contributed, and each of you contributed in very different ways. So for Commissioner Saltzman, you were there as a leader at the very beginning of the process, bringing this to the city's attention and asking for a prompt consideration of it. Your position has served almost as a gravitational force, in my view, to help pull the document to where it is now and to get it somewhere that is workable for us, but also achieves the other important goals that other folks on council have had. Commissioner Fritz, you helped me connect with members of the community, and this served two really important purposes. You know, I'm out in the community a lot, but you helped connect me with places I hadn't been before. And this served two very important purposes. One was I think I did my best to dispel some myths about what we do. But more importantly, I better understand concerns of the community, and I think that helped me equip me to better provide input to draft the document in a way that helped address those concerns. So I thank you for that. Commissioner Fish, you have asked the right questions of me and others in this at every stage. It's uncanny. I think it is a probably due to your experience as a leading civil rights lawyer in the past and labor lawyer, and it's when you ask questions like that make people like me sit back and think about how we've gotten here, what's right, what's wrong. It really is a tremendous service to the process, and I deeply appreciate it. Commissioner Leonard, from the very beginning, I think people have failed to grasp how close you and I are substantively on that. You and I knew it, I think, though. We're both committed to getting this right. You brought very much to the table, and one key thing was a steadfast concern about resources. You don't want PPB officers sitting around watching a fax machine for leads or getting coffee for the big feds. I respect that. I understand it. That's why we put that criminal nexus language in the document. And I have, as I've told you privately, and I'll renew my commitment publicly, I am committed to making sure that we honor that desire. You've got, as you've said to me many times, you've got burglaries, rapes, homicides, gang activity you need people working on. And we'll respect the important other priorities that the PPB folks have as we try to incorporate them in our efforts. Last and most important, Mayor Adams, your leadership from the outset has been tremendous on this. It is literally and in every other way true that but for your leadership and your commitment to getting us to a place where we do this better, we would not be poised, or you would not be poised, I should say, as a city council, to do what you're about to do today and what I think you're going to do in passing this resolution and in making Portlanders safer. It is something you should be tremendously proud of. You're, everywhere I went early on in this process, cynics and skeptics said to me, council will never do anything serious on this. It's just not that kind of place. It won't get it done. It'll get lost in the weeds. And you have proved them wrong. And I'm deeply, deeply grateful for that. Your careful, thoughtful, determined approach has gotten us here today. I appreciate it. I applaud your leadership. It's remarkable. And I'll also say that you and I remarked to you this weekend about this. You and I, 5 months ago or whenever it was, agreed on parameters that were intended to ensure civility and substance and policy and to leave division and politics out. And we've done that, and I appreciate your leadership. You have your efforts here will make people in Portland safer. I also want to thank the many people from the community who took part in these conversations. I learned a tremendous amount, as I mentioned, in praising Commissioner Fritz's leadership. I also want to thank the folks who have been most vocal in their concerns about the about this resolution and about our going forward here. We may disagree on some details, but I share your passion for liberty and for civil rights. In almost every job I have had since I was 15 years old, the first thing I have done on the first day is to raise my hand and swear to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. My passion for that liberty that is the cornerstone of the way we live is something that I share with the opponents of what I'm hoping we can get done today. With that said, I'll just highlight a couple of key features of the proposed resolution, and then I'll let you get back to work. First, the resolution gives the chief of police the authority to decide how PPB officers will work with the JTTF within the parameters of the resolution, of course. Getting this decision out of the political arena is tremendously important and bodes very well for our future work together. Second, the resolution gets PPB officers back into the daily fabric of the JTTF and its work. It provides that officers will be at our regular briefings. This is incredibly important. This is something I think I emphasized at our hearing before. Having local officers there to hear the daily briefings about threats elsewhere in the world and to say, wait a minute, we have that vulnerability here too. Or in the converse, to say, that's not a problem here, so that we focus our efforts on things that actually we need to worry about and set our priorities right, is incredibly important, and I'm glad that's there. Third, the resolution makes sure that when we need officers working cases, we'll get them, whether it's in the early stages of a case, the middle ground, or as cases develop further. The mayor and commissioners I've spoken to have all made that commitment crystal clear, and it's enshrined in the resolution. Fourth, the provisions which I consider to be micromanagement have been removed completely. I appreciate that. An earlier drafter would have involved limitations that just we wouldn't have been able to figure out how to make it work and would have precluded officers from taking part in early stages of cases where their insights can be especially helpful. So I'm glad that's taken care of. Finally, it's important to note that the resolution includes sensible and effective civil rights protections. Just like counterterrorism, protection of civil rights is a core mission for the people at the Department of Justice and the people at the Federal Bureau of Investigation. 50 years ago, last January, Bobby Kennedy was sworn in as Attorney General of the United States of America. He made enforcement of civil rights a core mission for the Department of Justice and FBI, and it remains so today. Here's what Kennedy said just a couple of weeks after he was sworn in at the University of Georgia, not necessarily a friendly audience on civil rights. What Attorney General Kennedy said on civil rights was, when it comes to civil rights, we will not stand by or be aloof. We will move. That is my mission today. It's Art and the FBI's mission today. And so I am gratified that these protections are here. In short, the city's JTTF resolution provides everything that I had hoped for from the beginning, which is to get folks back in the fabric of our work and to do it in a way that works for the community. So I'm happy to take questions. I actually have some stuff going on across the park, so I'm going to head back. The chief of the criminal division, Bill Williams, is here. Bill, can you raise your hand if you need anything? And I won't leave before you have a chance to ask questions if you have any.
Thank you. We're going to save questions to the end.
So I would want to say before you left, Dwight, that having had this experience exactly 6 years ago of attempting to negotiate a responsible relationship with the federal government and the city of Portland on the use of our police officers, what we quickly realized here at council is it was being done in an atmosphere of hostility and oftentimes anger. And it actually fit into some of our concerns. You couldn't have handled yourself more differently. You have, from the moment that I have been engaged with you, I've been very clear about what my limitations are. You've been respectful, professional, and goal-oriented. And I just find that extremely refreshing. And I think you do the Department of Justice a huge service in the approach that you take. And I, for one, certainly hope you hang around and can stay as the U.S. Attorney in Oregon, because I think your approach is collaborative and you're willing to find middle ground, and that allowed us to get to where we're at. Otherwise, we couldn't be here today.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thanks. Thank you.
You said you want to wait on questions.
We have one more person.
You want to hear from Ms. Meyer, but I don't need. Okay, because I can say that.
Yeah,
I'll slip out, but be right back.
Great.
Thank you,
Ms. Meyer. Welcome back.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams, Commissioners. Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. I, too, want to thank the mayor for the work he's done and for his inclusive nature of addressing the ACLU's concerns. And I also want to specifically also thank Commissioner Leonard, who brought with him historic memory of what went on in 2005 and prior to that, and to hold us to the standards that we set back then and honor it. And I also want to recognize, because I spent a lot of time on the phone and email with Ellen Osinek, her professionalism in handling this. And I appreciate the earlier time to have the expert panel discussion where our former FBI agent Mike German was able to come out and share with you our perspective. ACLU of Oregon is here today in support of the resolution, but with all due respect, not for the same reasons that the FBI does, and with some level of concern and caution. The resolution is the beginning of the conversation. It is not the end. We support it because we believe it builds on the 2005 resolution and is unprecedented. Here are the reasons. First, we are not rejoining the JTTF, and we are not signing a memorandum of understanding required in every other jurisdiction, but instead, officers available only when the chief decides, when PPB resources are available on an as-needed basis in consultation with the commissioner in charge, only on investigations that have a criminal nexus, and only in compliance with Oregon law. These laws include in Oregon the requirement that there be a reasonable suspicion prior to the collection or retention of information on a person or organization's political, religious, social, and associational activities. There's also limitations in Oregon under our equivalent of the Constitutional Fourth Amendment, Article 1, Section 9, search and seizure. And there are limitations on immigration enforcement. And there are others. The resolution includes additional protections that ACLU has urged since before 2005. The resolution provides the same level of security clearance to the chief as his or her officers. Security clearance is going to be given to the commissioner in charge, and there is access to the city attorney for legal advice. That is something that we, ACLU, have always urged from 2000 onward. There's a requirement that officers comply with Oregon law and not only notify the chief, commissioner, and city attorney of violations, but also to be able to ask the city attorney if that officer has any questions. Also critical is the training by the city attorney to officers working with the FBI and regular briefings for the chief and commissioner in charge. Finally, in the resolution is the annual report to council and to the public. As I noted earlier, this resolution is not the end, but the beginning. And the annual report needs to be as transparent and detailed as possible so that everyone understands whether the intentions and expectations of council were honored and what type of work our officers were asked to do when participating in an investigation with the FBI. We urge that report to include non-confidential details regarding the steps taken to ensure Portland Police Bureau compliance with Oregon laws, requests Portland Police Bureau made to the city attorney, including the number of consultations, the types of issues raised, and the action taken as a result, the number of investigations, the types of investigations, and at what stage Portland police officers were asked to work with the FBI JTTF, the annual number of hours and officers participating, the number of briefings from the FBI to the police chief and to the commissioner in charge, and how often terror alert information was shared with city officials. In determining how well the resolution works, we also urge that the city interview all police bureau personnel working with the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force to better understand any issues and problems, especially but not limited to compliance with Oregon law. Today, we hope that the expectations of the council and community are met. In a year, we should have the type of report that allows us to know whether those expectations were met, and if not, what the city has or will do to address such deviations. But ACLU has concerns, as we always have. Most of us in the room understand there is much sunlight between what the FBI can legally do under the U.S. Attorney General guidelines and what our Portland police officers can legally do under Oregon laws. Indeed, this resolution attempts to recognize and address this most important issue. And we are pleased that we are not joining the JTTF or signing an MOU deputizing our officers as we have done in the past, and especially in light of the recent revelations that the FBI and the San Francisco Police Department have been operating with a secret MOU that appears to authorize the San Francisco Police Department to ignore local police orders and California privacy laws. That is very troubling. And indeed, we look at this resolution as what the city is saying it expects. It is not a document to which the FBI, the U.S. Attorney, or the federal government is a co-signer. The reason we urge that Portland police officers only work on full investigations rather than assessments or preliminary inquiries is that when the FBI engages in assessments and preliminary investigations, there is no requirement that there be reasonable suspicion that the person or group being monitored is or may be engaged in criminal activity as required by Oregon law. Assessments only require an authorized purpose, but not any particular factual nexus. Preliminary investigations can be opened based on extremely limited information, including information about the First Amendment expression of subjects, and it is an easily attainable and speculative possibility standard. Neither of those standards comply with Oregon law. To put it in context, a real-life example of what is allowed by the FBI, the only difference is it happened in Pittsburgh, but I will put it in Portland. It is the day after Thanksgiving, and a well-established Portland Peace Center holds an anti-war rally on Friday. An FBI agent sitting in the Portland FBI office, at the request of his supervisor, but with no suggestion that anyone at the rally is connected with terrorism, no phone call from anyone with a tip, that officer decides to go to the event, collect material, and take a photograph of a woman who appears of Middle Eastern descent. He returns to the Portland office, conducts an internet research on the Peace Center. He writes a report, which along with the photograph of the Middle Eastern woman, is filed for permanent retention. Under the 2008 Attorney General guidelines, every single action of that FBI agent is legal. From attending the event, collecting information, photographing a woman based only on her appearance and political activity, and doing more research, and filing this in an FBI filing system. Anyone who understands Oregon law, including ORS 181-575, knows that this so-called criminal investigation does not comply with Oregon law, requiring a Portland officer to have reasonable suspicion that the person being subjected to surveillance and collection of information was indeed involved or may be involved in criminal conduct. We believe that our chief of police, our commissioner in charge, and our city attorney understand the significant legal differences and will work diligently to assure that our officers do not participate in those types of activities. Because it is not a question of if, it is a question of when our officers will be asked to engage in an investigative activities in violation of Oregon law. We hope with the appropriate training, not just on Oregon law, but on understanding the FBI guidelines, their minimal criteria necessary to engage in assessments and preliminary inquiries, that we will equip our officers to ask the right questions so that they can report it up the chain of command and refuse to assist. And one last note about the Department of Justice guidelines. They also allow for the FBI to identify locations of concentrated ethnic communities if those locations will, quote, reasonably aid the analysis of potential threats and vulnerabilities and overall assist domain awareness for the purposes of performing intelligence analysis. You will hear from a survivor of the World War II Japanese-American internment camps who will describe the FBI mapping of Japanese communities in Oregon over 60 years ago. The current FBI ethnic mapping is not much different, except it targets a different group today. This resolution attempts to create the necessary protections for our officers and for Portland residents, workers, and visitors, and we do urge its passage. But we also urge you to convey your expectation that our officers will refuse to participate in the type of FBI activity that has been documented across the country that abuses our civil liberties and our civil rights. Such activity is both inconsistent with the values of Portlanders and in violation of Oregon law and the Oregon Constitution. I appreciate your time today. I'm happy to answer any questions now or at any time. Thank you.
Well, I just want to, in the spirit of Commissioner Leonard's comments for Mr. Holden, I want to thank you for your extensive dedication of time and resources, not only yourself, but of the entire National ACLU, and really doing the fact-finding, the research, the policy issues, and then the practices and what's actually happened. It's been extraordinary, and I know during the same time period you've been lobbying on a number of very important issues in Salem, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
And can I just add to that that I find that in this example, you in fact do speak for the community. And I got on the wrong side of Andrea one time by saying, I don't think you're speaking for the community, but I want to say on the record, you are speaking for the community. You have spoken very clearly for the community throughout the discussions with the mayor and others. And just as Dwight demonstrated the needed quality of being able to find a middle ground and compromise, you did so too, but always never letting the goal be lost, and that is protecting the rights afforded us, not just under the U.S. Constitution, as you just eloquently pointed out, but also the Oregon State Constitution, which has the broadest free speech provision in the United States of America. And that's something we need to keep hearing over and over in these discussions, because some of us who really believe in those things, in the middle of these discussions with all of the different things that come at us, you can lose sight of the goal. And I oftentimes observed you as being, you know, one attorney by yourself arguing against a myriad of equally qualified attorneys on the other side, and you held your ground, and I respect you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I'd like to, with the forbearance of counsel, because we have so many people signed up, I'd actually like to hold questions and answers until Mr. Holton comes back as well. He had to attend. Is he back? Oh, that's good. Just in time. I'd still like to get to some of the public testimony since he's back. He can listen to that as well, and then we will take a break and then come back and have Q&A. But we've got a lot of people waiting and trying to move the public process along here. I'd ask that you limit your testimony to 2 minutes. If you have absolutely rock solidly prepared for three. We'll let you have three, but we want to try to get everyone in here before everyone gets exhausted sitting here. So brevity would be appreciated.
How long before we have questions, Q&A?
I'm going to let testimony go for, since we have so many people signed up, probably 20 minutes, and then we'll break, and then we'll come back for Q&A with our staff.
Is that going to work with our U.S. attorney?
I'm supposed to be back across the park, but I can, if you need me, I can stay if you need me to prevent your discussion, if you're supposed to.
Yeah, if you could either stick around or come back in 20 minutes, that'd be great.
Okay. We'll
yep. I've been keeping the public waiting too long on some of these hearings this week, and I'm trying to improve my facilitating here. So can you please call from the list?
Okay. The first three, please come on up, are Dan Handelman, Brandon Mayfield, and Henry Sakamoto. They will be followed by Joanne Bauman, Tom Nelson, and Madeline Elder.
Welcome. Part of the other thing I forgot to mention is if you are a lobbyist or authorized to speak on behalf of another group as their spokesperson, please declare that as part of your introduction. Please begin.
Hi, good afternoon, Mayor Adams and City Council. I did prepare at least 5 minutes. I'm hoping I can get three out of you.
I will give you three.
We at Portland Cop Watch appreciate the efforts of Mayor and Council to clarify the city's relationship to the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force. Though we think the current resolution is too vague about how often police will be working with the FBI and needs to strengthen oversight provisions. We are encouraged by some of the provisions in the new resolution, which we've outlined in our written testimony, which I've passed to the clerk. However, we remain concerned that the police commissioner, who's an elected official, will not have the same clearance as the chief and other officers under his command. We're also concerned the city attorney will have to sign security waivers to review only those cases which the Portland Police Bureau officers bring to her attention. We strongly supported the city's original plan to otherwise only work on cases that reach the full investigation stage rather than being roped into the speculative realm of assessments and preliminary investigations. It's very discouraging that U.S. Attorney Holton stated Portland's attitude on that matter was a deal breaker, since he and FBI agent Balazan told the Human Rights Commission in January that Portland could write any kind of agreement they wanted as long as they agree in some way to work with the JTTF. It feels as though the council backed down by inserting language about a criminal nexus, which is not defined in this resolution, and we are not lawyers. We've heard of reasonable suspicion and probable cause, but we're worried that a criminal nexus will be used to investigate people who come in contact with individuals who have been suspected or convicted of crimes and result in guilt by association. Other concerns about the new draft that was released on Wednesday or Tuesday night was the paragraph requiring the FBI to notify the police commissioner about substantial terrorist threats is now gone. We're also concerned about the 3 to 5 Portland officers applying for security clearance and attending daily briefings, which seems to fly in the face of the idea of cooperating on a case-by-case basis. We also cannot discuss this issue without pointing out the inherent danger of working with the FBI, including the FBI's raids with the Joint Terrorism Task Forces in the Midwest this summer of the Homes of Solidarity activists. Over the years, and since this issue resurfaced in November and to some extent today, we at Portland Cop Watch and you at Council have heard and will hear from people in civil liberties, faith, labor, faith, immigrant, environmental, and peace groups, among others, which kind of sounds like the list of people the FBI has a history of surveilling. I think it's well known that our organization was spied on at least twice by the Police Bureau's Criminal Intelligence Unit during First Amendment-protected activities. Judge Michael Marcus in the Squirrel versus City of Portland, also known as the Squirrel v. Moose, case exclaimed, "What possible criminal activity could there be in advocating for a police review board?" The result of that case was the city attorney and later the IPR director reviewed the CIU's files on a regular basis to ensure compliance with the Oregon law. Since we can't seem to trust the police to stay within the law when not working with the FBI, it's doubly important that this oversight exists if they work with the JTTF. I also just want to reiterate that I was in Pioneer Square on November 26th. The thing I was most upset about when I heard about the plot was that I understood that the police were blocking the street on and off to get somebody a good parking space, and I had to walk all the way from where I parked. No, really, that the FBI...
Your time is up, sir.
I understand. The FBI roped them into a publicity-driven sting operation.
Thanks, Mr. Handelman. Mr. Mayfield, welcome.
And just to follow up on... thank you, Dan. And actually, thanks for being here. And I want to reiterate what U.S. Attorney Dwight Holton had said, that I think a lot of thought went into this draft of a resolution or the new resolution. I think you've all done an outstanding job in trying to balance the things that we're trying to balance, and that's civil rights, civil liberties, and security. My criticism is, to use the example that Dan had used, Pioneer Square, the police were involved in terms of parking, and that's operational. But this is after the FBI had established, in the case of Muhammad, Usman Muhammad, that apparently he was engaged in criminal activity. At what point did the FBI make that determination? That's hard to tell. But if you look at their own affidavit, in that case, initially they were surveilling him. They had a court-authorized order. And some of the first telltale signs of possible criminal activity is that he was in contact with somebody who used to be in Oregon, who was in Pakistan, and he was a suspect because of what part of Pakistan he was in, an area that is known to harbor terrorists. Not that he is a terrorist himself. And at that point, one could argue that there was no reasonable grounds to suspect that Usman Muhammad was engaged in criminal activity. Okay, and why is that important? Because that's the standard that we would have to follow under Oregon law. Another thing is, the reason why we're here is because of Usman Muhammad and because the so-called Christmas tree bombing. But the reason why we got out of this resolution is, there's a number of reasons, but if my arrest had something to do with that, then let's look at my arrest as well. Because at the stage that the government arrested me, there was a memo from Beth Ann Steele, local FBI, to the California FBI unit saying, we don't have enough information to indict Mr. Mayfield yet. In other words, they didn't have probable cause that I'd committed a crime. And so that's why you guys were concerned, you, Mayor Adams, and Tom Potter at the time, that let's relook at this JTTF and our involvement. And so I'm still concerned that this resolution goes far. It doesn't go far enough. And you have to make a distinction between a cooperation, collaboration, and investigation. And I agree that we should be corroborating, and we should be sharing information that has been legally obtained. But you can't share information, you can't collect information in Oregon that doesn't have a reasonable ground or suspicion that the suspect is or may be involved in a criminal activity. This doesn't really address that. And my big concern is the FBI and the police have two different functions. It doesn't mean that we can't cooperate together. We serve and protect Portland Police Bureau. FBI investigates, hence Federal Bureau of Investigation. And therefore, even though, as Mr. Holton said, we're twins, we're not identical twins. So I'm still concerned about, I'm still concerned that there will be potential violations if we get officers involved at the preliminary investigative stage, and yet there still hasn't been established the criminal nexus. And that's something that I think you, Mayor Adams, had addressed, and originally in your draft you wanted to say we get involved in full investigation. And I applaud you for your foresight to address this concern that I have. As it stands now, I'm not sure that we still address that. However, I don't know if you're going to adopt it or not. I would just suggest that you don't. It's not clear to me. Some have said we're joining the JTTF, rejoining, we're not. I don't know if we are or not. And that language was stricken, and I think, Mr. Commissioner Leonard, you wanted to keep that in there. Politically, so it's out.
I've let you go over 2 minutes, and I appreciate you being here, and I appreciate your comments.
Can I make just one more comment? Just my suggestion would be on the nexus, to say a direct nexus, because that would mirror the language of our statute, and also let the city attorney get a secret clearance as well. I was in the military. That would make sense. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Just as a clarification, Mr. Mayfield, thank you very much for your leadership and for your participation in this process. Remember, you came to our town hall in January. That was very helpful. So if we were to make that change with the direct nexus, would you then recommend adopting the resolution?
I would say that that's better. It's better that you have the direct nexus to make the language more specific and maybe allow the city attorney to have a secret clearance as well. In other words, that makes sense to brief the officers. I'm supportive of it because it's better that the officers have guidelines than no guidelines. I say let's allocate our resources elsewhere, but if you're going to, this is a great job. And anyways, good job for Dwight Holton and the commissioners and everybody involved, and particularly Andrea Myers with the ACLU, who I agree with their concerns.
Thank you very much.
Sir, thank you for being here.
My name is Henry Sakamoto. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. I'm vice president of the Oregon Nikkei Endowment, whose mission includes informing the public about the Japanese